The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
G'day everyone, welcome back to the Sports Ethos New Orleans Pelicans podcast. I am your host, Lyle Swithenbank. This is a sportsethos.com presentation. You can follow us on Twitter, at Ethos Pelicans, at Lyle Swithenbank. Another off day in between game 5 and 6, so we know what that means. It means we've got another guest, another fantastic guest. We are joined by the legendary, the man who brought us Larry Nance. David Fisher, how are you going, mate? Great to have you on here.
Glad to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me. I really appreciate it, Lyle.
Oh, I mean, we might as well dive straight in. Pelicans, playoffs. We weren't meant to be here, I say in quotation marks, but we are. We're heading into a do-or-die game 6 in the Smoothie King Center, basically in, I don't know, 24 hours thereabouts, just short of. What's been your takeaways from the playoffs so far, and what are you hoping to see for this game 6?
A lot of it's just that it's good for the front office and the coaching staff. They need to experience playoff basketball with this roster, because that's the only way you're going to get the information you need about what guys you need to keep, what guys you might not want to keep. And then the biggest thing is that what holes exist on the roster for specific matchups. I think we've seen the biggest thing that's jumped out to me is the fact that this team needs a big who's more defensively minded. Larry Nance, I think, showed his value, especially in the Clippers game. But the biggest thing that I'm seeing from the roster wise, and I hope that the Pelicans front office agrees with me, is they need a defensive big that can come off the bench to give you a much different look than what you have with Jonas.
Yeah, I'm with you 100% on that. I think we've got Jonas, who's very offensive-minded, gets caught a bit in that drop coverage occasionally. I think they exploit it a little bit with the mid-range, particularly a speedy ball handler. And we've seen with DeAndre Ayton in this as well, with his little hook floater thing that he does. It's been very effective. I think they looked at perhaps thinking that Jackson Hayes was going to turn into that. We've seen that materialize as he more of a really tall power forward, I guess, who's athletic and can get out in transition. I think we do need a bit of a change, because even the other center that we have in Billy Hernan Gomez is sort of the Jonas light, where he gets a lot of rebounds, but still probably a bit more offensively minded than those quick, athletic, long centers, perhaps like a Robert Williams and guys. I don't think we'll be able to get Robert Williams, but you know, that sort of ilk. Game 5, I think the momentum has swung a bit towards us. So we feel that in the national media, they're all talking about us, saying, oh, you know, the Pelicans got the tails up. Game 5, however, they sort of adjusted, and we knew it was going to happen, but probably not the effort and result, obviously, that we wanted. What were your takeaways from Game 5 in Phoenix?
It felt like if you've ever had either a younger or an older brother, Phoenix got out to that lead, and they just kind of held the Pelicans at arm's length, and the Pelicans keep on swinging, and they're swinging and swinging. They're just, their arms aren't long enough. They can't ever cut into the lead far enough to make it, you know, really uncomfortable for Phoenix. And that all just goes back to, you know, that it was an ugly, disgusting first quarter. The rest of the game, they played reasonably well, but I mean, you dug yourself in a hole, and you know, that on that night in Phoenix with, I mean, Phoenix was very emotionally invested in that game, I would say, much more than you would expect your typical one seed. Nine seed and was 10 games under 500. Like, clearly the Pelicans, I mean, if you just want to talk about what they've accomplished, they've definitely got underneath the Phoenix Suns' skin. They have been felt, and they have Phoenix's attention. But that's what I felt watching that game, was just Phoenix is just holding them at arm's length. There were some adjustments that the Pelicans made that I wasn't necessarily a fan of. They started sending two to the ball a little bit more to try to get the ball out of Chris Paul's hands. That got the Phoenix Suns role players involved. That ended up with a lot of catch and shoot three opportunities. That ended up with more layups and dunks than they'd been allowing previously. And that's kind of been my take the whole time, is put it all on Chris Paul's plate and tell him your 36-year-old knees have to do this for all seven games.
Yeah, and we're going to pick you up full court.
Exactly. And as soon as you think that you might be wearing Herb Jones down, then Jose Alvarado is going to come in with, you know, all the energy in the world, and he's going to do the exact same thing. And I hope that the Pelicans get back to that a little bit, because I think that that's their best path to possible success. If you think of, we need to beat the Suns four times in seven games, the biggest way that I look at to do that is you need to tax Chris Paul throughout it. You look, the last time the Phoenix Suns lost the series in the finals, that was Milwaukee's game plan, essentially.
Yeah, and I think that's what they should be looking at, exactly the same thing. You know, Chris Paul's 36, 37 years old. We saw in the first quarter he was much more aggressive, I think, in game five than he was in game four. And I think that was by design. It was, I need to get my shots in now, I need to get my rhythm in, and then I can start creating for others because they're going to overreact to me. I think he was a bit more passive in game four, where we threw bodies at him and he had to sort of react. And instead of getting going in the fourth quarter to close the game, he was too tired by then. And
he was out of gas.
The momentum was completely behind the Pelicans, obviously, with the 18,000 odd people in the Smoothie King Center helped as well to power him through. But I agree with that adjustment. I mean, what happened is it was a game for the other guys. We saw Mikal Bridges drop 31 points when he hasn't really impacted the series.
Playoff career high right there.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, good time to do it. Yeah, cheers.
And the other thing, I mean, just to kind of jump in on that, is to a degree, as Pelicans fans, there are Phoenix Suns players that I am less inclined to give credit to, given how they play in a general sense. But DeAndre Ayton is automatic in a range that NBA defenses are inclined to allow. You know, that's a shot that NBA defenses in general, they're going to concede that one because they say this is a lower value shot. You know, that's a hard range to shoot in. That, like, because it's not even like the old catch and shoot 18 footers that we used to see in pick and pops in the older NBA before it went all threes. He's shooting even closer, and he's shooting in the like 10 to 16 range, which it's just a really nasty range to get the touch right. And then the other thing, like Mikal Bridges, like not only was he incredible on offense, he played 47 of 48 minutes. And I mean, he had CJ McCollum in hell the whole time. Like, so, I mean, credit to Phoenix. They looked like a team that was completely and totally engaged and locked in on the Pelicans. They're not looking forward to the next series or anything like that when you're playing Mikal Bridges 47 to 48 minutes. And they played really well. And sometimes, I mean, the Pelicans did play poorly, but some credit is due to Phoenix as well.
Absolutely. I think they definitely had to adjust. You know, they were playing the two ball handlers at times. Aaron Holiday cracked into the rotation, I think, purely to just give Chris Paul a hand. You know, the campaign was very good in the first quarter. And then got himself in a bit of foul trouble, still closed the game. And I thought he played a great game. I'm not a big fan of campaign overall, but I thought he played a good game, and credit to him for doing that. And Aaron Holiday came in and brought the hustle. And I think that was a bit of a masterstroke. I think we knew it was going to come. They talked about it. Monty Williams talked about it in his post games and the like, that he needed to not rely on Chris as much. But I didn't think it was going to work quite as well as it did. And it really was one of those games where the other guys stepped up. And like I said, like you said, you know, 47 minutes for Mikal Bridges is just ridiculous. He's still got at least one more game to play. So I hope he was in the ice bath. And also when they're talking about rushing Devin Booker back from this hamstring, I don't think they're doing that even after game three. I don't think they're saying, no, he's shut down for the series. Do you think there's any credibility, or is it all just sort of fluff at the moment that Devin Booker's coming back from this hamstring? Because it looked pretty crook when he did it.
It did. I mean, there was the brief shot of him leaving the court where he's saying, you know, I'm back. And I think a part of that's just the fact that the Pelicans have got under the sun's skin here. I think it's like if I was in the front office of the Phoenix Suns, I would love the fact that he wants to come back. And I would also be approaching it kind of how the Pelicans are with Zion, not necessarily in terms of the fact we're going to sit you for the rest of the playoffs. But if the Phoenix Suns are going to do what they need to, if they're going to accomplish their goals this year in the playoffs, they need to be able to win this series and not continue to tax Devin Booker. That's what they need to be able to do. They need to be able to tell him, you know, your first game back is either going to be Saturday or Monday or whenever the first game of the second round starts. We're not forcing you back into this series, because what if that goes sideways for them? Because if it goes sideways for them, and I mean, yeah, they probably match up pretty well with whoever they're going to see in the second round. But if you're looking at, you know, the Western Conference Finals against Golden State or Memphis, and if Booker's still out because he has, you know, made that injury even worse, like the Phoenix Suns' goals are off the table. And when you're looking at one of your most important players is Chris Paul at 36 years old, every season is precious at this point. And are they really going to risk Devin Booker and rushing him back? They said it was going to be a 2 to 3 week recovery, and now it's suddenly it's going to be 1 week recovery. They're feeling it a little bit. There's a little lemon booty going on over there.
It sounds like it. And I mean, I've done hamstrings throughout the journey, and I've never seen it. Well, and I've watched professional athletes come back from them. We had Brandon Ingram, you know, do one earlier on in the season. They said that was a mild sort of tightness. I mean, that was 11 games. So you're sitting there going, Well, hang on, he's missed three. That's a fast turnaround. I don't know what magic recovery they're doing over there, but hamstrings are so fickle. And if you come back too early, you're doing another one. It's happening straight away, and you'll feel it'll go away. So it's a fine line for them. But then if they don't roll the dice and we take it to a game seven, well, they could just
it's
be
all for naught anyways.
In Cancun, have a long summer to rest up. So it's a balancing act. We're coming into, I suppose, a tenuous sort of game six, do or die. We've been in this situation-ish with the play-in games. Do we expect a response tomorrow, or do we think it's all said and done? I mean, I think they're going to respond, but...
Absolutely, I think they're going to respond. The Pelicans have shown us all season long that they will rise to the occasion when their back's against the wall. And that doesn't necessarily mean that I expect 100% that they're going to win, but they're going to come out and they're going to compete. They're going to play hard. I expect that we're going to get a better game from CJ McCollum in front of the home crowd. Hopefully we can get a better game from some of the role players. The biggest guy that I'm looking at is, can we get Trey Murphy some shots? And can he see that ball go through the hoop a little bit? Because once that happens, it's going to open up space for all of the other big three, for BI, for CJ, and for Jonas, to be able to operate. And that I mean, that's been my biggest thing all season, essentially, is still is just I really trust Trey Murphy and what he brings to the roster, and I want to see more of him on the floor. So, but I mean, it's going to be game six. We're on our end, at least. I know for you, the time zone's completely different, but for us, we're finally getting a reasonable start time. Whereas for you, you're thinking about how early you got to wake up to catch it live. But hey, you'll be able to catch it live probably before you go into the office. There you go.
Well, exactly right. Yeah, that's the thing. There you go. Starts before work. So I'm happy with that. Perfect.
So, I mean, so the crowd will be more awake. There's not going to be any of those silly little delays because, you know, the previous game is running over, things like that. The tip's going to be on time. And I think, I mean, the city's going to definitely rise to the occasion. And I fully expect the entire roster is going to as well. If you were asking me for a prediction, I still think the Pelicans are going to win tomorrow. And then anything can happen in game seven. Absolutely anything. I mean, we'll post, if there is going to be a game seven, we'll just continually post that CJ McCollum Denver game seven repeatedly. Like, we know what this guy's capable of. So I can't wait for it. And then, I mean, we haven't even mentioned Brandon Ingram yet, and we need to talk about that man because he has been incredible all playoffs, and it's his very first trip here. He's clearly dinged up in multiple ways. He's tweaked an ankle. He had a really nasty fall on his back. He jammed up a couple fingers, and he's not even on the injury report. Willie Green said he's going to be fine. Brandon Ingram post game said it's going to be fine. I'm going to treat and I'm going to show up. So, I mean, as a fan, you love to see that. And I fully expect he's going to deliver. Like, he's delivered every single game. And it's all been on him. He's seen every kind of coverage that Phoenix can throw at him. He's put Jay Crowder into foul trouble, you know, the last two or three games straight. Jay Crowder just can't defend him without fouling, all the help defense. So I can't wait, because Brandon Ingram, the sense I get from him, he understands that, like, this is the beginning of his real legacy as an NBA player. And man, he's writing a storybook so far.
Honestly, Brandon Ingram, and that was perfect segue into him, because that was actually where I was going next. And he has Brandon Ingram. Gosh, I mean, we've seen his growth throughout the last few years, and then to do it on the biggest stage, and you're seeing people sit up and watch and say, hang on, this guy's really pretty good. You know, he's an absolute jet. And the way he handles himself on the court, off the court, has just been exemplary. I thought he's stepped up in his leadership this year. And then to come into the playoffs where he knows it's on his shoulders, he knows he's got to put this team on his back. CJ is definitely saying, you're the guy, and I think he recognizes he has to be. And everyone's instilling confidence in Brandon. And all we've seen is him go from really, really good to elite. And
yes,
I'm loving it, honestly. And to see the bloke, that fall on his tailbone, that looked horrible. I was like, and he just bounced up. He's like, oh, I've got to go shoot some free throws now. You know,
yep.
That mentality, I think, is just unmatched. Especially, I think he's the best player in this series, whether Devin Booker was playing or not. And he's been great. What do we need to see from him? We need to see more, I suppose. Another one. We need another Brandon Ingram game.
Yeah, we just need another game like that. And for me, it's just the thing that we've seen, the biggest thing that I've seen from Brandon Ingram that we didn't see, you know, early in the year or previous seasons, is his ability to get to his own spots and to get his own shots. And he doesn't let the defense speed him up. He doesn't let the defense dictate. He is always dictating to the defense. If the defense is giving him something, he's going to make it a better something. And then he's going to, you know, create that for the players around him. He's become a substantially better creator for others. It's simple stuff. Like, there's one extra dribble and one step in, and he moves that defender just enough and his momentum's off. And so now he can kick the pass. And, you know, that's the difference between a wide open three and a tightly contested attempt that somebody doesn't get the ball off at all, because you know, the defenders there. There's just so much of those little things that he's doing. And then he's just automatic. He's just shooting over guys like they're not there. Like Jay Crowder's right in his face. Doesn't matter. To Brandon Ingram, he's just pulling up for another 16-footer in the practice gym. Somebody's like swinging a boxing glove or whatever. They're like one of those big old foam noodles that they do. And it's just like, there's nobody there. He's shooting right over him. He's shooting right over Mikal Bridges. Gosh, the few times that they've switched Chris Paul onto him, it's like immediately that guy's food.
Yeah, you see his eyes light up.
Yes.
He's laughing at him.
So, I mean, Brandon Ingram coming into this season, most people were thinking, like, I don't know, he's like a top 30, top 40 player. And I mean, we were talking in, you know, the Bird Calls chat. We were like, is Brandon Ingram a top 20 player in the NBA right now? Cause I'm watching him play and I'm watching some of the other playoff games. I'm like, he's playing better than James Harden right now. He's playing better than Kyrie Irving right now.
Kevin Durant even in that series.
Yeah, I mean, so he's delivering with, you know, the weight of the franchise on his shoulders. Like CJ definitely is there and he's helping and from a leadership perspective and things like that. But at the same time, whenever you listen to CJ talk about it, Brandon Ingram's the man. Everyone in that locker room is 100% on board with that. There's no question. There's no dissension in it. Brandon Ingram's the man. We need a bucket. Who are we going to? Brandon Ingram.
Yeah.
So, and that kind of development and improvement from him is just a joy to see, especially as young as he is. He's not even 25 years old yet. Like he's been in the league so long that it feels like he's old, but he's not. He's just entering his prime and he's averaging 30 points a game in the playoffs on absurd efficiency.
In his first trip. I mean, people say, yes. Like, I mean, I saw the stats come up and he's like the sixth most points scored by a player in their first playoff series. I mean, come on. he's next level. And like you said, I mean, I think Larry Nance said it the best. He was like, it's not because you can defend him. It's because he misses. If he misses a shot, it's because he's mistimed it or he's released it wrong. It's not because anything that the defender in front of them has done. Because he leaps up, he's so tall, and his reach and his arm length, I suppose his release of his shot is so high that, mm-hmm. I mean, you could just about slap him. Well, people have slapped him in the face and he's still making the shot. Doesn't matter.
Exactly. The stat you were bringing up, it was, you know, the first guys to average, I don't know, like 25, 5, and 5 or something like that in their first playoff trip. And when the list of players is Michael Jordan, LeBron James, Luka Doncic, who was incredible, especially, you know, the first time he went to the playoffs. Yeah. Let's not diminish what he did the first time he went.
Absolutely.
And then Brandon Ingram, that's a list you want to be on. Congratulations. There you go.
That's some pretty good names, I tell you what. Speaking of Larry Nance, as I mentioned him.
Yes, sir.
I mean, one of the great photos of this season has been you standing alongside him holding his jersey. The interaction there, I was sitting there going, that is awesome. Can you just detail how this Larry Nance agenda has come about and then how you've managed to him to then come and also know that you've been petitioning for him to come for a long time? Can you talk us through that?
Well, I mean, so goodness, 2-3 years ago, it was after the Pelicans had drafted Zion. And I mean, we went through Derek Favors and then Stephen Adams. But even when Derek Favors was there, I was like, look, the Pelicans need a big man who gives them the option to go small, but they don't lose, you know, everything going small. So the Pelicans need a small ball five center. And you look around at the league and you look at the contracts that might be movable. Larry Nance at the time was in Cleveland. And I was like, that's the guy they need to trade for. And I'd loved Larry Nance even when he was coming out of Wyoming. I'd written about, hey, the Pelicans should draft him if he's going to be, you know, available when their second round pick came up. And he wasn't because he went earlier, but from the get-go. So I would tweet you know, about, hey, what about this trade scenario to get Larry Nance? What about that trade scenario? And one of the guys who used to write for the site, Justin, he sends me this meme, the Cookie Monster meme, right? And I thought it was hilarious. So I downloaded it. And, you know, occasionally whenever I would tweet another, you know, trade scenario getting Larry Nance here, I'd just include the picture. Apparently, somebody in Cleveland. Now, I'm originally from Ohio, so it might be somebody that I know or something. Somebody from Cleveland pointed this out to Larry, unbeknownst to me. And so, if, you know, the Pelicans make the TPE with the Jonas trade, and I'm like, well, Larry Nance will fit in there. And then they start talking about trading with Portland, and I'm like, well, Larry Nance will fit in the TPE. And then the trade finally gets announced the morning of the trade, right? And it gets it the details are beginning to trickle out, you know, the pieces that are involved. Yeah. And Larry Nance was not one of the early pieces. And it was funny, that morning, you know, we're chatting about it, and Ollie, who has connections inside the front office, he's like, you know, these are the pieces that we know about so far, and Larry wasn't in there. And I was like, the TPE is still there. Larry fits. And I keep on like, it's going to be Larry. Come on, man. It's got to be Larry. And then he gets announced into it. And for a while there was some concern that maybe they were getting him, but he was going to be moved. Like, he wasn't a mainstay because of the knee surgery coming up, et cetera. He has knee surgery. He's finally getting back into the lineup, and I'm just all excited about it, right, on Twitter. And he just tweets back to me, hey man, DM me about this. And cause he's going to give me tickets. And I was like, wow, that's wild. And his first thing is like, man, I've known about this meme for like 2 years. Like, there's no freaking way, man. There's just no, cause I think I'm just tweeting into like the oblivion of Twitter and like a very small, like the Pelican sphere. Mm. And supposedly he's getting it when he was in Cleveland before he ended up in Portland. And when I went to, I mean, he gave me great seats, backstage passes, essentially. And he comes out, and he and I talked for maybe like 5 minutes, if that. And I was like, look, man, ever since we got Zion here, I was like, the Pelicans need a small ball five, and you're the guy. They need a guy who can defend. I mean, we've already seen the shot blocking. He can bring the ball up some.
Yeah.
He can switch onto the perimeter. Chris Paul's kind of ate him up in terms of he's making baskets over him, but Larry Nance is still doing his job. I mean, he's there. His hands are up. I mean, at some point, you play good defense, you challenge the shot, and if he makes it over it, hey, it was better offense than your defense.
Yeah.
That happens. That's basketball, right?
Absolutely.
But it was great to talk to him. He was incredibly gracious about it. I tried to not be a creep about it. That was my biggest concern. I'm like, man, I'm 40 years old here talking about this guy. But at the same time, like, he's very immersed in like internet culture. So he kind of gets it.
Yeah.
He very much gets it, more so than some of the, a lot of the Pelicans before. And I was just like, look, man, I'm so happy you're here. And the biggest thing he said, and we've heard it from CJ since in interviews and stuff like that, is the guys who are here really love to be in New Orleans.
Hmm.
Like, the narrative around the organization, how it's portrayed nationally, is inaccurate, because the guys inside the locker room love it here. Like, they absolutely love it here. And that, a lot of that's just a credit to Willie Green and the culture he's established. But yeah, I was just so happy he came here. And then, like, cause I wasn't reaching out and asking for anything. I was just so happy he was here. And then he's like, hey, you want tickets and a jersey? I'm like, man, that's amazing. But I'm just happy you're suiting up for the team.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's pretty awesome that, you know, like you said, he is very ingrained in the internet culture, and you can see he loves, shares memes and gets involved with it all and hypes it up, and even to the point where, what was it, Herb said that he wasn't allowed to share anymore Officer Herb memes.
A little
memes
too much.
And,
but so, there, you know, he was after game four.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
He's been fantastic for us. I think he's really came in and contributed. He's done exactly what we've asked him to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was that, they switched onto him a few times, and Chris Paul when he was cooking. But honestly, there was not much he could more he could have done. He was out there guarding a guy who was absolutely flaming from outside, and
yeah,
you know, and he defended as well as he could. I mean, this guy was making tough shots, and I mean, I think the culture as well. He's very well spoken, very knowledgeable of the game, and that's something that comes through when they do the interviews with him. Is he gives great answers. You know, he sits there and he will actually analyze what's happened. He'll think about the question and deliver something that you're like, that's quite profound. I quite like that. You know, like it was everything he says is very well considered. And I really like that as a fan, being able to watch that and him say, well, okay, so when I speak to Brandon Ingram, I say, X, Y, Z, you need to go here and do that. But also I big him up and you're the best player on the court. And anyone else that's saying that he isn't, is wrong, basically. Essentially, the way he holds himself, I think, and as a professional, as a guy that's been around the league for a long time, I think it's been really good for our locker room. I think CJ's been that as well. And having that trade at that time right before the All-Star break, I think really, I suppose, launched us into another phase of, okay, so we're not just the underdogs anymore. We've now got the professionals who have been there, who are seasoned veterans, who can now teach our guys to say, you've got the fight, you've got the mentality, you've got the confidence, you've got the culture. Now we've got to get that winning. And guys that have been winners and have been in that winning situation, I think that's been key for us. Have you noticed that shift, I suppose, heading into this post-All-Star break, I suppose, has been the really big shift? You think you've gone to another gear?
Oh, absolutely. And this has been kind of one of the drums I've been beating. I mean, the Pelicans have been a top 10 team on both ends, offense and defense, since February 1st. And that's not some tiny, you know, sample size. It's 32 regular season games. Yeah. And I mean, you mentioned, you know, the Pelicans had heart and they had try hard and they had, you know, a lot of elements you need. And CJ and Larry, and Jonas as well, they're bringing more of the attention to detail and the execution and the stuff that, you know, vets get. And finally, I mean, the front office has been searching for the right vets, right? They've been searching for vets that can, you know, teach these guys how to be NBA professionals and how to win games on the court. And I mean, there were some swings and misses there, because when you get vets that, you know, don't fit or, you know, are on the wrong side of their career where they're no longer, you know, positive producers, it's harder as young guys to really listen to that guy as much. It's different when, you know, two of those guys are your starters and they can give you 20 points on any night. And, you know, Larry Nance is out there, you know, busting his ass on both ends, and chipping in, you know, in all the categories. He's not just a specialist doing, you know, this just one thing. He's, you know, he's blocking shots. He's getting offensive rebounds. He's, you know, there at the end of the regular season in the play-in, he's knocking down a couple three-pointers, like timely shots. And like, they finally kind of landed on the right mix, and the team has definitely leveled up. I think Brandon Ingram himself had definitely leveled up just out of the All-Star break. He's been a better player. You know, whatever they had when they went to that dinner in Phoenix before the first game, like, bottle that, make it again. I mean, CJ's got his own winery. Let's go.
So, yeah, get him up there.
So, I mean, It definitely, I mean, CJ's never, I mean, BI's really never had that vet on the team that knows how to lead and explain offensively in a way that kind of interlocks with Brandon Ingram's game. Like, Drew Holiday's offensive game isn't anything like Brandon Ingram's game. CJ's offensive game, there's a lot of similarities to where they're going to operate, how they're going to operate, how they're going to get their shots. When they're really cooking, it's a lot of 1, 2, 3 dribbles into your shot. A lot of mid-range stuff. Not, you know, there's not a whole lot of overwhelming guys with athleticism between either of them. It's a lot of craft. And so when you get a guy who's kind of on the same wavelength, you know, they can just vibe about basketball. When they talk about, you know, what good basketball is like, you know, for them, you know, the way they play the game, it makes sense. Like, what was LeBron James really going to teach Brandon Ingram when Brandon Ingram was a kid with the Lakers? And LeBron James is just like, well, you know what I do is I just freaking overwhelm them because I'm faster, I can jump higher, I'm stronger. Like, none of that's applicable to Brandon Ingram. Like, I can't do those things except for the fact that I have super duper long arms. Well, CJ can talk about all the craft that he's doing footwork wise to get to his spots in the mid range. And then Brandon Ingram can use that and just apply the fact that I have ungodly long arms and a high release that nobody can touch. And you apply that, and then you get what we've seen, you know, the last 2 months and then the playoffs, where he's just shooting over guys like they're not there because, you know, he's in this zone, but also he's getting to those spots. He's under control. And that's something he was building towards. But I mean, yeah, CJ might have a little bit of a credit to be sprinkled on there too, because CJ's game really, you know, meshes with that. And there could be a lot of, you know, goodness, the analogy's escaping me, but like, forgery sometimes is the best credit right there. You know, there's no shame in copying something that somebody else is doing that's working in the game of basketball. And absolutely. And you see a lot of that with what Brandon Ingram's doing compared to, you know, CJ's game.
Absolutely. And I suppose they also comment that, you know, they're both students of the game. They love watching film, always talking to one another about we could do X, Y, Z, or we could do Y, defend this guy this way, score this way. And like you touched on, I mean, it is. You can see they run the same plays for CJ and Brandon to get them to that spot, that little baseline turnaround, which is just when Brandon gets going there, you're like, nah, it's over. Start jogging back on defense. He's already done it.
But the thing is that like, me as a fan is like, oh, that's over. Like, that's a bucket. But like, when you're watching it, like, and you try to get impartial for a moment, like, my goodness, that is hard.
Yeah.
Like, over NBA contest, you know, fading away 18 feet away, barely getting a glimpse of the rim. And it's just automatic. Like, that's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't think there's many blokes, even in the NBA, that could do it. I think we got a very, very special player there, and hopefully he can lead us to this game 6 victory and then hopefully a game 7 victory. David, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank
Where can
you
we
for
find
having me, Lyle.
You got anything to plug that you'd like to shout out to everyone?
Most of the stuff that I'm working on is more like postseason stuff. When the Pelican season eventually ends, my hope is that stuff doesn't publish for 2 to 3 weeks. But I mean, the beautiful thing about where we are as Pelicans fans is the NBA lottery's, you know, less than 3 weeks away. Guess how many NBA teams also have lottery balls out there? Just the Pelicans. Yeah. All the rest of the playoff teams, like, the lottery doesn't matter. That's just something else the bad teams do. But the Pelicans are like, you know what? We could still land a top 4 pick here. Yeah. Thanks to the Lakers being terrible. So I've got stuff that I'm working on just in terms of, you know, who I'd like the Pelicans to draft and the rest of the guys at the site. And then whenever the Pelican season ends, or, you know, if they're successful in upsetting Phoenix, we'll definitely have, you know, the Bird Calls will have more episodes, hopefully this weekend. Hopefully positive episodes. It's going to be positive either way, because I mean, even if we get, you know, Pelicans aren't supposed to be here, and we still need to celebrate the fact that the Pelicans have had a roundly successful season, and we're going to do that. And then we're going to start talking about, you know, the same things we kind of that I opened with on this podcast, which is, you know, that, what things have we identified that the Pelicans need if they want to be a team that can go farther in the playoffs? But I'm not going to rule anything out right now, because my hope is that, you know, we get a W tomorrow, and then we can talk about game seven. And then, you know, anything can happen in the game seven. And I'm not going to put it past Brandon Ingram and CJ McCollum and Jonas Valanciunas not to get a W in Phoenix, because they've already done it before.
Yeah, with you 100%. I'm very excited to see how it all plays out. And at the end of the day, you know, we got this season, but we're set up for so much success into the future as well. And I think it's a really exciting time to be a Pelicans fan. David, thank you so much for your time. It's been great chatting to you.
Thank you, Lyle.
Mike Rowe here with a radical idea. If you want to see more companies make more things in this country, buy more things from more companies who make things in this country. I refer in this case to the incredible t-shirts, sweatshirts, blue jeans, and more made by my friends at American Giant. Everything American Giant makes is made in the United States. And right now, you can take 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com/Mike. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So thanks again to David for joining us, guys. Go and follow him over at the Bird Rights and Bird Calls. Plenty of stuff going on over there. They are right on the pulse with all things Pelicans, so check all that out. And yeah, it's great to chat to people. Heading into Game 6, as we know, it is a do or die, backs against the wall, you got to fight moment. We worked so hard all year, and let's keep this season going with another win in the Smoothie King Center. Make sure you're down there. Earlier tip-off, so no excuse. Get down there and have fun and go Pels. I'm going to leave it at that. As always, this is the Sports Ethos New Orleans Pelicans podcast. I am your host, Lyle Swithenbank. Thanks again to David for joining us. Look after yourselves, and bye for now.